Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to Violet Reiki Radio. I would like to thank the founders of the Seika Network for giving me this wonderful opportunity to bring to you each week this show about Reiki, Violet Reiki Radio. My name is Rose Jimenez. I am your host. I am a 4-time Reiki master teacher in 4 different methods of Reiki. And each week on Violet Reiki Radio, we discuss Reiki, all things surrounding Reiki, its discovery, its roots, the practice, and more. We also discuss many things that the founder Mikao Usui was interested in his life. He was interested in almost everything. He was an avid learner. He loved to know everything about everything. He had a voracious appetite for knowledge. So everything that he was interested in, or most things, we discuss here on Violet Reiki Radio. We discuss sociology, philosophy, medicine, different methods and different modalities for healing and improving your life, for personal growth, for spiritual growth. Everything, metaphysics, even metaphysics, because he was very interested in metaphysics, and he was very accomplished in and interested in martial arts, which we have never really discussed on the show, but tonight we are going to discuss martial arts and Reiki, because this evening we are having on the show my very good friend, very respected martial arts instructor, practitioner, Restita De Jesus. And just a little bit about Restita. She began her martial arts training in 1978 and has been teaching martial arts to people of all ages since 1982. Restita specializes in children's classes. Restita holds black belt and instructor certification in Butokukan Karate, Wuha Kwendo, Wushu, Kyodo Esgrima, Yang Tai Chi, Chen Tai Chi, and Qigong. Her other students have included Aikido and Ledo. She is the host of a weekly online radio podcast known as Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio, here on Blog Talk Radio. She is the founder of the Seattle Snapdragons Bullwhip and Traditional Target Sports, a club of enthusiasts interested in bullwhip cracking, trick cracking, blowgun, slingshot, and knife throwing. Gita is also a Hall of Fame member in the Masters Hall of Fame, World and I don't even know how to say this. I'll ask her when she gets on. Martial Arts History Museum Hall of Honors. She's a lifetime member of the Association of Women Martial Arts Instructors, and she is executive board member to the Pacific Association of Women Martial Artists. So that's just a little bit about my great friend, Rosita De Jesus. She's also a Reiki practitioner. So this evening, we're going to discuss a little bit of how Reiki and martial arts, the principles and disciplines behind both, are beneficial to all of us as far as developing personally and spiritually. And that indeed was the intent that Usui Sensei had in mind when he brought his Usui Reiki Ryoho to the public. Now, to go on a little further, Reiki is a universal life force energy. It is an intelligent energy of love and wholeness. It understands the cause of problems and what healing is necessary. The Reiki energy has the wisdom of its own, healing and balancing all aspects of a person's mind, body, emotions, and spirit. Reiki is a blessing and instantaneously conferred sacred potential for healing, protection, personal, and spiritual development. If anyone has any questions on Reiki, feel free to email me at rose@violetrosereiki.com. You can also take a look at my website. There's lots of information on there. My website is violetrosereiki.com. And you can feel free to send me an email or, you know, whatever. If you have questions regarding Reiki, just feel free to drop me an email. I love answering questions on Reiki. I love giving people the right information and leading them the right way, because there's just so much misinformation about Reiki. So don't be shy. Feel free to contact me if you'd like to know about Reiki, if you have questions about whatever you've heard about Reiki, maybe you're a little confused, anything. I'm here for you. Also, I have a page called Reiki Ward. And the purpose of Reiki Ward is for distance Reiki healing. Reiki Ward was founded almost 3 years ago, and that was the purpose, to make distance Reiki healing available to everyone globally, no matter where you are. You can go to Facebook. I would do a search on Reiki Ward page, and you will find us. And then once you're there, all you have to do is put a post with the healing request you have and tell us what the request is for, who. You can give us a first name. If you want to send along a picture, you may do so. Just post the way you would on any other Reiki page or any other page on Facebook. We will get to the healing when we get your request. We will get on it immediately. We have around anywhere from 400 to 500 practitioners daily who check the wall on Reiki Ward and start sending distance healing. And it's for free. This is for humans, animals, you name it, we do it. Reiki Ward does 2 to 3 rounds of healing every day at a minimum. And once the request is in and the healing has started, the distance Reiki is starting to flow, we then place the request on our healing crystal grid for 24/7 energy healing. Don't hesitate. Put in your request, and we will get to it, you know, ASAP. Sometimes, because it is global, and we have Europe, and we're here in on the East Coast. So if we have California, Europe, whatever, the time change might make a little gap there, and we might not get to it within moments or hours, but we will get to it as soon as we can. Okay, and I think what I'm going to do right now is a colleague of mine wrote a beautiful song called the Gokai Song, which is the Reiki precepts, and he sings them in both English and Japanese. And it's a great way to get to learn the precepts, the Reiki precepts. So I'm just going to take a little break now, play this, and when we get back, hopefully Rastita will join us. Hi. Okay, I am back. I'm having some chat room problems. Oh my goodness. Lorinda Weatherall, I see you. I see you. I hope this means I'm back in the chat room. This is just a little bit of weirdness here. But we shall prevail. We always do. And okay. All right. Now, I may get thrown out again, but I'll just keep coming back like a nightmare. Okay. As I said, my guest this evening is Chisquita de Jesus, and hopefully she will be with us in a little bit. In the interim, I think I will read you guys just a little bit about Reiki and Mikao Usui, the founder of Reiki. Let me just do a checkup and see. I think I lost my chat room again. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Oh no, I'm still here. Oh, hi, Lorinda. Yes, Lorinda's having issues too. We're all having issues. It is the onslaught of Mercury retrograde. Dum dum dum. Everybody panics with Mercury retrograde. But really, aside from electrical issues and strange things happening with our communication devices and any which way that we can hook up and hook into electronical things and stuff, Mercury retrograde is a great time for reassessing and revitalizing and rearranging and reorganizing and, reflecting. It's not a bad period of time. But there will be electronic glitches and kinds of, and maybe it's to revisit our lessons of patience and revisit our lessons of tolerance and acceptance and surrender. Who knows? But let's just see. Area code 661. Who am I speaking with? No one. Okay. Weird. This is going to be a weird evening, folks. I promise you. Okay. We'll get started at some point. All righty, let's see. All right, well, I think Christina's laptop is starting to cooperate in the interim. I am going to give you guys just a little bit of background of Reiki and a little bit of Mikao Usui, the founder of Reiki. We'll discuss Mikao for a little bit here and the different original methods of Reiki. We take a look at things to define what Mikao Usui taught. One thing is that he was born into a samurai family with influences on his life ranging from Japanese martial arts to Buddhism. And there has always been a link in Japan between spirituality and martial arts. Lao Tzu is quoted saying, "He who excels in combat is one who does not let himself be roused." That is why Japanese warriors trained in peaceful practices to practice their fighting and meditative skills. Now, some of the training that Mikao Usui is said to have completed on Mount Kuramayama is both a martial art and an esoteric Buddhist term. In traditional Japanese martial arts, to be considered a founder of a style, one must have first received a divine understanding through a spiritual experience, not unlike Hikao Usui's experience up on the mountaintop. It is from this seed of divine understanding that a founder then goes on to create a system or method. If this method is to remain divinely inspired, then the teachings must always flow back to the founder. This is a traditional belief in Japan. Unless it can be claimed that one has the pure source and the direct teachings from the founder, then what is practiced is considered a degeneration. This does not mean that the true method should remain stagnant. All branches of Hikao Usui's teachings would need to retain the original methods, which are the traditional aspects of the five elements of the system of Reiki, while teaching their personal add-ons openly. Apart from the continuity of teaching, a shared lineage is the other major requirement for all Reiki branches. Now, traditionally in Japan, a lineage is passed on when the student's mind becomes one with the teacher's. It is not to do with one's role or place within a family structure. Sense of lineage is rarely experienced within the Reiki community. In the system of Reiki today, lineage is merely a written lineage that traces the teacher and the teacher's teachers back to the founder of the system. And I'm sure everyone has their lineage, and they have their, the names of all of their teachers and the names of their teachers' teachers, and so on and so forth. So, and the thing is, it's important to point out here that true Reiki, same thing with martial arts, no one is going to get a black belt or certification in any martial art over the internet. It borders on hilarious, because this is something that must be passed down from teacher to student. And that passing down and that practice, when both teacher and student are in the same physical place, in the same physical location, then that's how the art, the practice, etc., is passed down to the student. You don't just dial it up, go on the internet, fill out a application and boom, you're certified. Here's your white belt, green belt, yellow belt, whatever. It doesn't work like that. I think we may have Christina on the line. Let's grab her while we can, because this prelude to Mercury retrograde got me a little shaky.
No.
Christina.
Hello there. How are you?
Hello. So far, so good. What am I looking for? I know what I want. I want this.
Aw.
Thank you. I get to use that button so infrequently.
Oh, my goodness.
Applaud our guests. I'm glad you could make it.
Yay. thanks for having me. It's been a while since I've been on the Violet Reiki radio show, so it's a pleasure to be here.
I don't think you've ever been on Violet Reiki Radio.
I think once.
Really?
Once.
In the test, maybe.
I don't remember what we were doing, but I don't remember.
Because I know I have been chasing you as a guest. It's what your class starts or ends right where my show begins.
Yeah, and in fact, I just want to apologize to the listeners already, because if you hear stuff in the background, like people grunting or shouting or whatever, it's because I'm still in my studio. And
so throwing people around behind you?
Yeah, pretty much. and punching stuff and stuff like that. And so, you know, I apologize in advance for any noises that you hear in the background, but I promise I'm not doing it to them. They're doing it to themselves. Okay.
And it's all, you know, it's all got to do with personal and spiritual development, folks. You know, your body slam on the floor, it's for the person's own good.
Well, we're kidding now, but you know, actually, you know, I'm looking forward to talking about the similarities between Reiki and certain types of spirituality and martial arts, because many times people do think that the two are completely separate. It will be cool to talk about. So,
well, martial arts is not my thing. I mean, well, I don't practice it. I love martial arts. I've always been very attracted to martial arts. I love to watch other people do them. I love the expertise. I mean, I just think it's great, and I admire you all. But me, no. If it involves any kind of pain to my body, no, I can't. I'm a big chicken and a coward. But anyway, what I think is funny is how a lot of people. Well, we'll start with the martial arts. A lot of people have this conception that martial arts, you go and you learn them to become a big badass.
Oh, nothing could be farther from the truth. And let me go ahead and nip that myth in the bud, right?
Please do.
Well, see, the thing is the stereotype propagates because of stuff in the media. I mean, you've got all of the movies out there that have martial arts, you know, like The Matrix, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you know, all of those types of movies with fighting in it. Steven Seagal movies. And
Chuck,
you know, you know, when Bruce Lee came on the scene, you know, everybody was kung fu fighting. It literally, you know, the song even came out for it and stuff like that. But
now
then it kind of
not gonna leave my head.
Yeah. But then, you know, after like the mid-70s, that kind of waned off a little bit, and then disco took over. But then when Steven Seagal started coming out with those movies in the mid-90s, I think that's when all of that badassery, quote-unquote, came into play, because, you know, there had been like almost a decade and a half of nothing really being portrayed in the martial arts. And you've got Steven Seagal that comes out of nowhere and puts just amazing dynamic, you know, butt-kicking, knife-inserting, bone-breaking type of action to the screen. And then from there, then, you know, the advent of MMA and all this other kind of stuff. And, you know, and unfortunately, though, some people will get drawn into the Hollywood part of the martial arts and forget that it's a discipline. When you get into martial arts, to get to the original myth, when you get into martial arts, you know, you find out really quick that it's in and of itself a discipline. You have to have the mind for it. Doesn't matter that you have the body for it, but you have to have the mind for it, because it will help you in making the changes to your body, whether it's just the skills that you need or being able to take a hit or a kick or what have you. And good martial artists will find out that the more that they practice and the harder that they train, the less likely they will want to be that swaggering badass that walks down the street and, you know, goes, "Hey, I know kung fu," you know, because, you know, once you find out what you're capable of, you don't want to cause problems for anyone. Because, you know, the first time I accidentally, and this was on accident, folks, the first time I broke somebody's nose, I felt so bad. And, you know, and that student, he has to live the rest of his life with his nose, because we had broken it like 3 times. He has to live the rest of his life with a misshapen nose because of just 1 minute of inattention on my part. Okay, well, 3, considering I broke it 3 times. And And well, he kind of like takes a little bit of that responsibility too, because, you know, he said, well, I walked into the second one. And I'm like, okay, I'll take that, whatever. But I felt really bad about breaking his nose, and I trained to hit hard. So I realized, wow, I broke his nose with a light tap. What would happen if I was really going hard? What would happen if I was
for it? Yeah.
Yeah. What would happen if I was really going for it? What would happen if I were to really kick at somebody's knee? Someone's going to be crippled for the rest of their life. I don't want to be that person, even if I have to defend myself. However, getting to the self-defense part of it, you know, you do have to take, you do have to get into that realm of, I have to hurt another person to save my safety or my life or the safety and the life of a loved one.
Right.
Or perhaps even, you know, and I hate to think about it, and many people prefer not to think about it, but, you know, if you have to take a life to save your own or that of a loved one, that's something that we have to consider.
It's survival, yeah.
It's survival, and it's just, you know, the quote-unquote badass at that point has nothing to do with it, and it's completely different than surviving a street altercation. And, you know, the swaggering, you know, I can fight anybody, bar brawl kind of guy or gal. It, you know, that's not going to save your life. You know, overconfidence and arrogance, that's been the downfall of many people. So, you know, I always try to tell my students to, you know, to look at the martial arts for what they are. You know, they're technically supposed to teach you to fight, but, you know, a true warrior trains to not. That's the pinnacle of a martial art warrior, to be able to, as Bruce Lee says, to fight without fighting and to win without drawing your sword.
And it's kind of like, that's why you have samurai that were learning how to do flower arranging, and people are like, mm-hmm. Huh? It's like you have to have, in order to know one thing, you need to know its exact opposite.
Exactly.
In order to become in a place of balance, or what they call in the Yuan method, neutrality, like mm-hmm. Cam Yuan, he's a Shaolin martial artist and practitioner, and his mm-hmm. whole method, the Yuan method, is you want to get to a place of balance, because if you're living too much in this emotion or place or that,
exactly.
you're out of balance. And the only time we're really totally in a perfect place, and even as far as optimum health, is when we're imbalanced.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right, yeah.
And definitely, you know, when it comes to Reiki as a practice, definitely it's exact same thing, you know. As Reiki practitioners, all of us that are listening, you know, we all know that balance is the key. And just like in Reiki, where we consider ourselves as more so a conduit instead of being the person in charge of the
right.
healing, or the person in control of the healing, but rather than being a conduit, it's the same with martial arts. The skills that are taught in martial arts, the practitioner is more of the conduit. You have to be able, as the practitioner, to be able to find that balance, to be able to turn on the tiger switch, as I call it, when it needs to be turned on, and to be able to turn on the scholar switch, what we call in our school, the tiger and the dragon. The dragon's very wise and very calm, and will sit back and, you know, look at all of the options that it has before it does something rash. And then you have the tiger that, you know, acts on impulse, you know, that kind of thing. And you have to be in the middle. And in Kung Fu, they call that sense of balance, like the tiger and dragon in conference, where the tiger and the dragon have to talk with each other in order to find out what the best method of defense or attack is. And you can only hear the tiger and the dragon talking if you yourself are in balance. And that's something that was taught to me from the very beginning, that you have to hear both. You can't just listen to one.
Well, it's like a council meeting, actually, because, you know, when they have council meetings, when someone's looking for, you know, they go to their elders or whatever, or the people in charge, you know, it's never really one person answering. The council meets, and then they come up with the best answer for the situation. So,
exactly.
So that's
very true. Yeah, but like, you know, regarding the myths, no one, you know, how do I put this? I tell my students also that I don't care how long you've studied martial arts. You know, there's no such thing as a badass, you know, in a way, right?
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
either people that know what to do with martial arts or those that don't. And if you know what you're doing with martial arts, you're not a badass. So,
and the
no
funny thing is, most of my friends who practice martial arts and the people that I know who practice martial arts are some of the kindest, softest spoken, gentle, loving souls, and you'd never know it. I mean, you know, if you didn't know they practice martial arts, you'd never suspect them of knowing martial arts to the degree that, you know, a couple of them do know. I mean, it's amazing, because they're not just your average everyday punk, because it's usually the punky people who are getting their asses kicked, because when all that anger and all that violence and all that hostility comes bubbling up and boiling up from inside of them, you just know it's a given they're going to make mistakes, because they're not in a place of balance.
and I mean, that's
where the training comes in.
Because
you're trained not to get overly emotional. It's got nothing to do with emotions. It's the discipline.
Exactly. And that's another big similarity between Reiki and any energy work in general and martial arts, is that once you get emotionally invested, well, in martial arts, I'll talk about martial arts, and then we can, you know, and then we can like apply it to Reiki. Once you get too emotionally invested in what you're going to do in self-defense, or just emotionally, you know, invested, period, angry or tense or fearful or whatever, it really affects the decisions that you make and the type of awareness that you have in that 4 seconds that it usually takes for an altercation, right? Like, for example, you know, I was taught that from start to finish, an altercation, a physical altercation, should only last about 4 seconds from start to finish. And that's from the initial threat to the finalization of your defense. 4 seconds, 1001, 1002, 1003, 1004. That's a pretty long time by martial arts standards, but still a short time in relation to everything else, right? Well, you know, you've got 4 seconds to figure out what you got to do. And if you're angry, if you're blinded by rage, or if you're so fearful that you're stuck in your tracks, or if you're not confident, you're not going to be able to channel your energy into your technique or defense accordingly. And unfortunately, that could mean, you know, life or death, or, you know, or physical therapy or a hospital stay. Now, if we apply that to Reiki, you know, I look at it as the same thing. If we become emotionally invested, and, you know, I look at it as if we get too emotionally involved in, like, let's say if we're working with a client. If I work with a client and I get too emotionally involved in, you know, what they're telling me about. Like, for example, sometimes I've had clients just open up and tell me about this crappy thing that happened to them, or how they feel after a divorce or whatever, right? If I find myself getting drawn into that, I literally lose sense of what I'm doing, where I'm going, and I lose that connection with everything. I lose awareness with myself, and I lose awareness of the client. And, you know, and in a way, you know, if I were to do the same thing in martial arts, I could be dead, if I'm, you know, attacked on the street. I can't, you know, I have to tell myself I can't allow myself to get emotionally involved in this street attack or, you know, that kind
right.
of thing. And I know it sounds really impersonal, but, you know, I was taught by my teacher, Sensei Daisy Thompson, that, you know, we're not in charge of where the chi goes. In a way, the client is, right? In
right.
a way. And mm-hmm. same in martial arts. What the attacker does determines what energy is given to them. They control it. I just follow. If they come at me with a baseball bat, they get hit with the force of a baseball bat. You
right.
know? If they come at me with a knife, then chances are they're going to find me with an equalizer, whether it's my own knife or I got to pick up a stick or I got to break off a car antenna or whatever. You know, they control it. And that's the hard part, you know, getting back to the badassery, quote unquote. I've met too many people in the 40 years that I've done martial arts that do think, oh, I'm doing martial arts, I'm a badass. And they will overreact to something. You know, I don't know how many stories I've heard, Violet, about Rose, about like some guy, some drunk pushes them, and then they send that poor drunk to the hospital with a broken arm and a broken leg that's never going to heal right, all because a drunk pushed them once.
Right.
You know, you overreact, and now someone else pays the price. You know, and perhaps that guy goes to jail. So, you know, what do you learn from that? You don't. You know, we learn that, well, I overreact and I go to jail, or someone else is affected for the rest of their life. Now, there's another side to that. Some people will say, I really, really thought my life was in danger, so I acted according to what I thought. Well, that's the thing, is that if you're too emotionally invested in a situation, your awareness of things, you're going to start seeing things either completely wrong,
yeah.
right?
Right.
You know, or you're going to, you know, yeah, or you're going to doubt yourself and not see things as they are. So, hence the balance. So,
yeah, it's all perspective, because, like, in my classes, I'll, you know, every so often I'll get a student who will say, I have a stupid question. I'm sure you get this too.
Yeah.
I have a stupid question, and I'll say, there's no such thing as a stupid question.
That's right.
There is no such thing as a stupid question. You know, we're all afraid to, again, perspective, we're all afraid to appear ignorant,
mm-hmm.
or, as they say, stupid. But
right.
that's your ego. If you really don't care what people think of you or how they feel about you, and your main interest here is gaining the knowledge, then you'll ask anything, because you know when you get the answer, you're getting the knowledge.
Exactly.
So that's all part of, you know, we allowing our ego to get in the way of our true expression of living our lives the way they should be lived. We're so caught up in ego and perspective that they're like
mm-hmm.
they're like leg irons on our legs, because we can't move forward. So
yes. Afraid. And, you know, and I've seen it so many times in the martial art world, how ego becomes the primary driving force behind what they do. And that hurts. Not only the style that they practice, but also the school that they teach in, and it hurts the students as well. And, you know, and also from a Reiki perspective, it if someone gets too caught up in the ego and, oh, look, I healed this person, and or this person, I'm the healer, or this person gave me great reviews on Yelp. Well, I've yet to see Reiki practitioners on Yelp, but, you know, this person gave me a glowing review. Are you on Yelp, really? I'll have to give you a glowing review. You're the only person that I know that does Reiki and is on Yelp.
I don't think so. Come on, Restita. Really? Seriously? It's all part of, you know, the advertising. It's like, you know, I'm all over the place. Like one of my students said, you know, you're like horse poop. You're just like, you're all over the place. I'm like, well, it's called marketing.
Horse poop. I've never heard of that before. You're
this
like horse
what
poop.
You call your sensei. You're like horse poop. Okay. But what she meant was that, you know, she saw Violet Rose Reiki all over, like, okay. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, but it's true.
Like,
I mean,
they need you, okay? You get this, but like in Reiki, you know, you're introduced to someone. First words out of their mouth, oh, I'm a Reiki master.
Oh,
okay.
My gosh, yes.
Do you have a name? Yes. Or is that your name, Reiki Master?
Yeah. Can I just call you Rum for short?
Yeah,
R.M.
Really.
Rum. Yeah, and we get that too in the martial arts. You know, last year I was helping.
You guys do. Hi, I'm a Sifu. Hi, I'm a Sensei.
Oh, you'll be surprised.
Hi, I'm a black belt.
People will come up to me not knowing who I am or whatever, right? And they'll be like, hi, I'm Grandmaster John Smith. Well, hi, I'm Rashida. You can call me Rusty. You know, well, my seat is over here. And this is the story I was going to tell was I was helping set up the event, the Masters Hall of Fame, last year, which is an event that recognizes excellence in the martial arts. And, you know, and you don't have to be a celebrity or anything. We look for honest, genuine people that are helping their community and are making a genuine contribution to the world of martial arts, right? Aw. I have to plug it.
Well, you deserve it.
Thanks. And anyway, I was helping set up the seats and stuff. And you know how people are sometimes. People will want to get in first. Well, the doors hadn't opened yet, but somehow, some way, some people managed to get in, and we weren't even ready yet. And this guy comes up to me and says, you know, can you tell me where my seat is? And I said, and you are? And he said, I'm Grandmaster John Smith. And I'm like, hi, I'm Rashida. You can call me Rusty. And your name again, John Smith? And I had to look all over the list for this guy's seat. And I said, well, you know, are you an ambassador for the organization or are you an inductee? And he's like, well, I'm an inductee. And I said, well, sir, only the ambassadors are allowed to be in here right now. So they can pick their tables. Inductees don't get seated until 6:30. Well, I'm being inducted. And I said, sir, you and 100 others.
Oh, God.
You'll have to step outside. And he just would not take no for an answer until I had to go get the CEO. And I said, Dan, help me out here, buddy. And he's like, you, Mr. Smith. You know, we're going to need you to wait outside because inductee seating does not start until 6:30. Ambassadors can be in here. Rusty is an ambassador and a board member. And if she says you're going to get out, you have to get out. And I'm just like, oh, my gosh. And that just put a sour note on the rest of the night because, you know, it seemed like that energy that he put out, you know, transferred to many people.
Ripple effect, yeah.
Yeah, it was like a ripple effect. And I'm like, I can't have this happening tonight. You know, it's going to ruin everything. But luckily, you know, it didn't. I mean, did the energy ripple out? Yes. But did it affect anybody? No. Thank goodness. Because everyone else was caught up in the, you know, frivolity and the fun of the event that night.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, and yeah. You know, and the joy, you know, but all it takes is just that one person.
That one person.
And in martial arts, you know, we would say all it takes is that one person to destroy a lineage, right? And in martial arts, we value our lineage, you know, very highly, especially in Japanese martial arts and Chinese martial arts. Well, in any martial art, you value your lineage because the elders that come before you are the ones that pass down the very thing that you treasure now. So you have to show that respect, and you have to, in martial arts, conduct yourself in a way that reflects your teachers, your masters, their masters, the founders. And, I, you know, in Reiki, you know, I know you do the same. You know, I know you to only show the utmost respect and to be a perfect reflection of everything that's been taught to you. And unfortunately, though, I've met a few people within the energy healing community that let a little bit too much ego get the best of them. And it's just so sad because, you know, I don't know. I mean, Usui Sensei would just turn over in his grave.
Yes, and I want to thank you for that lovely comment. I was going to ask you, you know, to me, it's all about Reiki is Japanese, and the only thing that I practice is Reiki and Japanese Reiki. I don't do any martial arts or anything. But to me, it's all about discipline, respect, and honor. And when I see people doing things and speaking, just having this garbage come out of their mouth with respect to Reiki, and the ego battles that are going on within the Reiki community, mm-hmm. I say the same thing you just said. Usui Sensei must be rolling over in his grave. And it's very simple. I mean, everyone is trying to complicate Reiki, and I believe that they're complicating it because of their own ego. Because Reiki,
yep.
and Usui Sensei's own words, is a simple practice. And then you have those people who are, oh, well, mine is bigger, better, greater. To me, that's a slap in the face of your sensei. How could you even say such a thing?
Right.
What kind of respect and honor do you have for Usui Sensei that you're making such comments?
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is, well, I'm going to turn Reiki inside out and upside down, and I'm going to philosophize it to death. Look, if you want to go that deep into Reiki, and if that's something you want to do, and add on and add on and add on, because you know as well as I do, in any subject, you can dig so deep as to not even know what you're talking about at some point. But,
right.
And to me, that's a personal preference, okay? But I really don't think that that's the way Usui Sensei meant for Reiki to be handed down and to be taught. I think it's a little out of hand now.
Yeah. You know, I was taught the same thing through my first sensei that, you know, although, you know, beginners might go into it and think, oh, it's a lot to remember, the symbols and, you know, that kind of thing is, it's a lot to remember and this and that and the other. With practice, it becomes simple. It's supposed to be simple. Usui Sensei wanted it to be. It's the same with martial arts. At first, it is hard. We have to, you know, learn this move and that move. We basically have to teach ourselves how to walk and run again and make our bodies do stuff that it's never done before. And after a certain amount of time practicing it, and after a certain amount of years, it becomes simple. And the neat thing is in martial arts is once you master a movement, a concept of a movement, I shouldn't say one movement, but a concept of movement, it becomes much easier to apply it to anything else, whether it's pottery, whether it's, you know, learning archery or learning a new body skill or something like that. Now, in regards to Reiki, I can see how, you know, Reiki people today can master, you know, the original method that Usui Sensei brought down to us, and then go, oh, well, now this makes sense, and that makes sense, and that makes sense, and they make their own practice out of it. I see no problem in that. In fact, in a way, I see no problem in like naming your method, but just as in martial arts, because in martial arts, we're allowed to name our own curriculums, given that you have blessing from a teacher. Now, here's the thing. Here's the kicker. You have to have blessing from your upline teacher or from the master of an upline master of your system to create and propagate your own system. And even if you have your own system in the martial arts, your own curriculum, so to speak, how you teach it, you still are bound to showing respect for your roots.
Right.
There's no getting around it. And I think what's going on nowadays, for the few that are like, you know, bigger, better Reiki, you know, that kind of thing, is that they've got their own practice, and that's great. They've got their own method. They've probably, you know, found their own way of you know, communicating with the energy with themselves and bringing it via a conduit to the people that are receiving. That's awesome. But again, when you start claiming responsibility for that, you know what I mean? Like, my style works better than the original Usui style. That's when things get kind of sticky, because
that's when you're insulting your sensei.
Exactly.
Really?
And last
it's an insult.
It is. And last I checked, I didn't know that there was like 50 different kinds of ki out there.
Don't get me started. Don't even get me started. Oh,
you
dear
know?
God.
Oh, my goodness. And, you know, and it's the same thing in martial arts. You know, there's only so many ways you can punch. So no one can claim, you know, lay a claim to fame on this, like, uber scorpion flying punch or something like that, because it's been done before. However, this is kind of off the subject, but hot yoga, right? Hot yoga. Okay, so. Let's talk about hot yoga. Well, what's the actual name of it? It's
Is that the Bikram yoga?
Yeah, Bikram. Thank you, Bikram yoga. Okay. Yeah. You know why there's so many other people that call themselves hot yoga, and then when you ask them, "Well, is this Bikram?" they'll go, "No." Well, you can't call yourself Bikram unless you are following the trademarked curriculum. There is a specific flow in Bikram. That goes from, like, you know, I don't know, I've never done Bikram, but, you know, that's kind of like saying you have to do this move, followed by this move, followed by this move, followed by this asana, followed by this, by this, by this, by this, by this. And if you do that in, like, 104-degree room or something like that, then it's Bikram. But if you're not certified in that method, if you can't prove that, you know, if you're not certified in the Bikram method, you can't say you're doing a Bikram type of thing. You have to call yourself something else. But, you know, if I do yoga, if I do, like, let's say, I don't know, if I do hatha yoga in the middle of August in the Philippines outside when it's like 106 degrees in the shade, am I going to get sued by the Bikram people? You see what I'm saying? So it's like there's only so many ways that you can punch. There's only so many ways that you can move the body. There's only so many ways you can do yoga in the cold or in the hot. You know, just so happens that, you know, teacher Bikram trademarked that flow. So now you can't call yourself Bikram. Now, he laid claim to that. Yes, he did. But the thing is that he laid claim to the sequence. You can't lay claim to the movements, because you know what I mean. It's like
right.
It's like it's just so weird that people in the martial arts and you know, in the energy field, you know, get so caught up in the me, you know, won't you forget?
Very, very much in the me, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, won't they forget about who's laying on their table?
Oh, definitely, you know, can't see the forest for the trees. I mean, well, you got this tree and in front of you, but you're too busy looking at the forest and you forgot about the tree right in front of you that is trying to get some kind of healing and treatment, yeah. It's like a lot of times my students will get caught up in hand positions.
Right.
And turning, you know, and I tell them, don't get all uptight, you know. It's good if you do all the hand positions. If you don't, then that's fine too. Usui Sensei did his treatments basically after the five initial positions. The rest of the body was intuitive. It was on intuition only. And come on, intuition, that's your divine, like I tell everybody weekly on my show on Friday afternoons, go by your intuition. Your intuition is what I call your inner GPS. You know, we all got GPS for the cars. But your inner GPS, that is what I call guided perfectly by spirit. And your inner GPS is your intuition. It can't be wrong. So, okay, maybe you didn't get all the hand positions and you missed, like, you know, a foot or something. It's fine because you're being guided by, spiritually guided by a higher power, by higher consciousness. So the person on the table is going to get what they need. And a lot of times, if I can't turn somebody over, well, I know the reason why. Because I was paying more attention to, well, not that I was even paying attention, but I was not allowed to leave a specific area of the body, or maybe a couple of specific areas of the body. Because, you know, it's like generally 3 to 5 minutes in one spot. But sometimes I'm at one spot for 10 minutes. I don't stress it. I know that when I'm supposed to move off of that spot, my intuition will tell me, okay, move now. Because there have been times where I think to myself, well, I think I should move. And the answer from my gut is, nope, no moving.
Nope,
stay there.
Don't move, yeah. Exactly. I have one client where I actually spent a lot of time at the heart chakra, just a lot of time. I'm like, and I thought the same thing. Should I move? I've been here for like 10 minutes. Should I move? Should I move? And, you know, we're still talking, but in my head I'm thinking, should I move? No. You know, and I knew I shouldn't have moved. I knew I shouldn't have moved, but I still kept questioning myself. And I was like, oh, my gosh. You know, what's going on? You know? And
well,
that just
do you notice that at the same time you're having that thought, should I move? I know with me, if I go to move my hands, I can't.
Yeah. Exactly. And
that's how I know when it's time to move.
And I knew intuitively that I shouldn't have moved, but I like you were talking about, I was stuck on pattern, right? And the same thing happens in martial arts. I tell my own students all the time, techniques will get you killed. Principles are what guides your techniques. So don't concentrate on, oh, I got to do combination number 4. If they punch me this way, because what if they move differently? What if they don't, like, come in as close? Well, combination number 4 isn't going to work for you. You're going to have to, like, use your principles. What's the principle there? Oh, they're too far. Principle, use the next longest weapon. Okay. Sure, it's not going to be combination number 4, but you just got to learn to flow with it. And that's the hardest thing to teach students is flow and moving intuitively and without thought, which is what is called in both Reiki and martial arts is Mushin, right? No thought, Mushin. But, you know, the funny thing is, though, is that the only way to get there is that you have to follow a pattern at first, you know, and but it's tough, though, you know? Like, when I see, like, a intermediate student here, I know they've mastered this concept or that concept, but then when it comes to freestyle self-defense, they freeze. They can't do it. And I have to remind them, just let go, you know. What does your toe see? What does your fist see? It's not about what you see. You know, what does your body see? Okay.
Exactly.
And
it's
go
kind
with
of what
it.
It's kind of what we all really need to apply to real life circumstances. And I know most people find this very hard to do, which is why a lot of us are living in, you know, disappointed and frustrated kinds of situations, because it's very hard to do. Patience is something which is very hard to come by, but it is attainable. And then the next thing you get is that, you know, the lesson is surrender. Just accept and allow and surrender. And now,
right.
if you got the patience lesson, okay, now the universe says, here, see what you can do, surrender. And it's like, oh, God, I'm back in that place again. But really, it's all about surrendering and being in flow. And this is what these practices are trying to teach us, because, you know, the more you just give it up and you just connect with your energy, and then your energy is connected to universal life force energy, then you're in sync. And when you're in sync, everything goes very well. But
yeah,
as Don Miguel Ruiz said, we're taught this dream. This is the way life is going to be. This is how it is. This is what you can expect, which is all poppycock. We have to each create and embrace our own dream. When we let go of everything people have told us, let go all old perceptions, let go everything mm-hmm. that we were handed down, which is very difficult. I'm not saying it's easy to do, but I'm saying the more we cling to those old ideals and ideas, the more we're standing in the same quicksand pile.
Yeah,
and we're not going to get anywhere. It's in the surrendering and in the releasing that we progress.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But you know what's funny though is like, you know, not everybody wants to admit that they're not in control. That's the thing, you know, is our attachment to a sense of control.
The
ego gets in the way, you know, once it all boils down, you know, everything from not wanting to relinquish control or being in control, which is the same thing. It is ego, and it's tough, you know. I mean, you know, in fact, I'll just tell a really quick story here. A few years back, when I was seeing clients a lot more often, one of my clients asked me. She said, "So, you know, do you find it hard to separate the martial arts and your Reiki?" And I'm like, can you, what was the question? You know, because I didn't know what context she was talking about. Right. And I said, "Oh, do you mean like, do I find it hard to separate the physical, you know, hi-ya karate chop, you know, with, you know, Reiki?" And she's like, "Well, yeah." And I'm like, "No, it's the same thing." And she said, "What?" I'm like, "Well, granted, I'm not going to sit here and squeeze your heart out, you know. You know, I'm not going to take your rib out when I lay hands on you or anything like that, you know. I'm not going to kick you in the face, but but I told her it's the same thing. I have to be aware of where I stand right here, right now. I have to be aware of what I'm feeling when I'm working with you. I have to be aware of whether or not I'm being too invested in this. Am I thinking, or am I, you know, making crap up in my mind as to what I'm feeling, right? Am I doubting myself? Am I, you know, just letting go, you know?" And I have to think about the same thing in martial arts too. You know, am I thinking too hard, or am I letting myself flow? So it's the same. The only thing that's different is how it's applied. So
right.
Technically, Rose, you are a martial artist, technically.
Oh, okay.
Yes, technically, you know, because the in martial arts, it's not the physical part, okay? That's 10% of the skill set in martial arts. How to kick, punch, control your feet, and, you know, not fall down from exhaustion in training. That's 10%, right? The other 90% is everything we're talking about right now. You know, what makes a good Reiki practitioner? What makes a Reiki master? You know, the abilities to maintain a sense of balance and to live by that. You know, to not let one's ego get in the way. And, you know, the one time that I did let my ego get in the way in the martial arts, I paid for it. And I paid for it. You know, I got kicked right upside the head, and I thought I was going to go deaf in one ear. And I was just like, "Oh, my gosh," you know, the scariest thing ever. And every time my ego gets in the way, I break something. that last ankle injury you saw me post on Facebook, that was ego.
Oh, that was a cocky rusty.
that was a cocky rusty. That's right. And when I fell down, I thought, see, there you go again. You know,
I just
got to go. Like the guides told me, don't be a jerk. But no, you had to be a jerk. And
I was all through it all the time. I remember a long time ago, thank God, I was, my ego was exploding all over the place. I had an ego that was about the size of, I don't know, South America. And I had many, many anger issues and stuff. I was a chip off the old block. I was exactly like my dad. And that's, you know, when I was growing up, that's what I learned. The person who is the hostile, angry, bully, Tasmanian devil wins. And it's like, oh, so wrong. And the universe got a hold of me. And I'm telling you, energetically, this is exactly what it felt like. It was my come to Jesus moment. I felt like somebody had grabbed me by the back of the neck and the back of the head and slammed my face into the concrete, knocked all my teeth out. And I got up and said, oh, my God, I don't ever want this to happen again. And there were major changes that came down the mountain so fast. It was like, that was like, okay, now I got it. And I spent the following years fine-tuning that lesson. And you know, a lot happened in that, but I remember that. It was like, oh, yeah, you think you're all that? Here, boom. Like, oh,
yeah.
And like that, you try and tell people, don't go there because this is going to happen. You know they're going to go there.
Exactly.
I know very few people. I can count them on maybe three fingers who I've said, don't go there because, look, this is a life lesson. You don't want to do this. And they listen. The miraculous ones, they listen. The rest of the fingers are like, no, I gotta do that. I have to prove this. Okay, I'll be here with like Band-Aids and, you know, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I've done that too here in in the dojo. You know, there's always going to be the few that listen, and you know they go a long way. And then there's a few that don't, and they have to learn the hard way. Sometimes they have to be suspended or kicked out, and then later on they become like the prodigal son or the prodigal daughter, and then they come back and they go, yeah, you were right, I'm sorry, this and that and the other. Because, you know, the thing is that, you know, in any practice, whether it's Reiki, martial arts, any type of sport that you're trying to get good at, there comes this point where you get to a skill level where you know you're good at it, and you know where your goals are, even though you're not there yet, you know what I mean? And you start to get cocky, you know? Like, in a way, in martial arts, I tell my students, you kind of have to go through that in order to really learn, right? And it's either you get past the cocky, what I call the cocky purple belt stage, because that's the intermediate stage, where most people will get cocky and they think they can, like, take on anyone and stuff like that. Either you get past that or you get your ass kicked, pardon my French, right? And then you learn from that. Either that or you don't learn from it, and your life is going to be full of strife. You're going to be in fights all the time. You know, you're wondering why you're losing friends. You wonder why, you know, your life is crappy. You can't find a job. You know, it's you. It's not the art. You know, it's, you know, we can't blame our crappy life on Reiki isn't working. We can't blame crappy life on martial arts isn't working for me. It's supposed to, like, change my life. And that's the reason why the first question I ask anyone that walks through my door, why do you want to do martial arts?
Right. And same thing with me. Why do you want to learn Reiki? Uh-huh.
Why do you want to learn Reiki? And, you know, 9 times out of 10, people don't know why. You know, they say, oh, I saw it on TV. Well, okay, that's awesome. But why do you want to do martial arts? And I think, you know, that's something that, you know, any Reiki practitioner or any athlete that wants to be a pro athlete, they have to ask themselves, why do I want to do this? Because if you get into it for the money, then find a new profession. Right, you know what I mean. All you're gonna
so
get into
wanted,
Reiki.
Yeah,
yeah. If that's
so
all somebody wants to
get
into Reiki
for the money.
Yeah. If that's all somebody wants.
How many students I have that can't wait for their Reiki master because then I could open my practice and make a lot of money. That's
exactly.
Not the way it works.
Well, you know, you'll be surprised at how many martial artists will do the same thing. And speaking of martial artists, my brother Bob. is on the line right now. And then he pressed
one.
Saying,
we had, yeah, is he 818?
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. Hi, Bob.
Oh, man, Rusty, you suck. You're logged in. You weren't supposed to know I was here.
I logged in. Yeah. Well, I had to log in because my laptop was being weird, and I had to go, gosh, you know, which button do I push? Do I push the one here? Nope, because Violet is signed on as that. So I just happened to be logged in.
Yeah, she threw me out of the studio momentarily. I'm like, who's logging
Sorry.
In? Sega? What the
That's
hell?
Me. Hi, Bob. How you doing, bro? This is Robert Deal. He's my co-host on the Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio Show, also on this network, the Seika Talk Radio Network. And he's my best buddy and my brother in the martial arts. And, wow, I'm surprised that you called. Well, right on. Thanks, Bob.
I get that text says, I'm on Violet Reiki Radio. So I was listening and said, I got to call. I got to call it. And the purple belt phase. I was thinking, what about the guys who have it the black belt phase?
Yeah, well, those are the people that haven't learned. Those are the people that haven't gotten their asses kicked yet.
Oh, God. You know, I have another caller. So since I have two martial artists on, let me see if this person,
okay.
It says they have a question.
Yeah, they've been on for an hour. Thank you for being patient.
6-1, you're on with Rose and Restita and Bob. Hello.
Or not. Area code 661. Did you have a question?
All right. Well, there's a question mark next to their number here, but maybe they hit the one by mistake. So I'm just gonna let you hang. Because I know I had picked up on them before and they didn't say anything. So I don't know. Well, you know, we don't have problems chatting. Rusty, or Bob. We'll just talk amongst ourselves.
Yep.
But it's nice to have you here, Bob.
Well, thank you. You know, Rusty was talking about instructors or people getting into martial arts to make all sorts of money.
And that's you,
how's that working out, Rusty?
It's not. You know, anyone that gets into martial arts to make money, unless your last name is Gracie, it's probably not going to happen the way you think, right? Because, you know, I know Bob does martial arts out of the love of the art, and, you know, I mean, you were teaching out of your garage, you were teaching out of parks, Bob, you know. I was teaching, you know, like in a box, literally, for years and years and years. I was teaching in the community centers for years, then moved to a bigger dojo, then moved to a smaller dojo, then moved to a box. Finally, we're here in a 3,000 square foot facility, but we're still not getting rich. We're only making enough just to get the bills paid. I'm not making any, you know, triple digits or anything like that. I'm not getting rich off of this. And, you know, and when I got into it, and I know when Bob got into teaching, because it's a decision you have to make. You're either a martial artist that wants to practice the rest of your life, or you're a martial artist that wants to practice, then pass it on. And if you're going to pass it on, it's a commitment. Wouldn't you say so, Bob?
Oh, yeah. Do you know how many classes I've taught? I've taught literally hundreds and thousands of hours at no cost.
Mm-hmm.
For
mm-hmm.
friends and for other schools and for students and for people I've just hung out with in a park and started sharing knowledge with.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, once you have a passion for that, once you have a passion for martial arts or Reiki and the practice of it, right, then mm-hmm. of course you want to, like, share the benefits of it. Because, you know, I know what the practice has done for me. You know, it's allowed me to, like, get back in touch with myself, because I spent, like, 25 years being external, and I want to be a badass. I want to, you know what I mean? I had a chip on my shoulder, too. You know, most martial artists go through that purple belt phase. I just happened to go through it for, like, 20-something years before I, before I discovered Reiki. And, you know, now getting close to 40 years in the martial arts, I know what Reiki and Qigong and Tai Chi has done. It's allowed me to get in touch with things that I've ignored for so long, and has really, like, how should we say, it's really, like, rekindled the love of teaching, right? Because, like, you know, if you teach a lot, and Bob knows what I'm talking about, there just comes this point where you, like, start to almost get to that burnout phase, right?
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, my gosh, I'm so tired, you know, that kind of thing. Not tired physically, but I'm just tired. I need to, like, go away for a year or something like that. We've all hit that part. But, you know, when I started getting serious about Tai Chi, Qigong, serious about Reiki, you know, just the practice of it made a whole heck of a lot of difference. And I want to just make a point to new listeners out there that are just getting into Reiki, or even just listening because, you know, you heard about martial arts, what? You know, if you're a beginner in martial arts, in either one, you have to go into the practice without an expectation, right? And you have to not listen to the stereotypes. You know, I mean, Bob, how many times have you been asked if you were vegan when they find out you're a martial artist?
Oh, yeah. And then they find me at a hamburger joint having a beer.
Right.
Get out
right
of here. People ask you guys that? Are you vegan? They equate vegan style eating with martial arts?
When they find out that you're a martial art teacher, you know, they equate that with master, they equate that with, like, uber healthy lifestyle. Yes, it's true. You know, we teach people how to be healthy, but, you know, I'll go have a beer. You know, I eat meat, lots of it.
Chili,
I'm Filipino.
Like,
I'm Filipino. What am I going to do, right? Do I go through vegan phases? Yes, I do. I go through phases, like, for a month where all I want is vegetables, and then it's like, oh, we're back to meat again. We also get asked questions like, and I'm sure, you know, Reiki practitioners get this too, what do you feel about Deepak Chopra, right? And it's like, wait a minute, was it like, is it a requirement that as a martial artist I gotta, like, follow him? You know?
Yeah.
Is it a requirement that I have to know every Marianne Williamson quote? You know? As martial artists, we get asked all sorts of crazy questions because there's an expectation.
I'm
for
sure
that.
You come across the Reiki people who, when they talk to you, they kill me. When they talk to
you, know,
they're holding their hands together in gassho or namaste position, and their voices become so gentle and so sweet. And listen to me, I'm an enlightened spiritual
being. I know.
I'm Reiki. Are you kidding me?
I know, and it's like, I've been around people that have said this before. That person's definitely not enlightened. Look at them. And I'm like, and you are? And how do you know?
Exactly.
And how do you know you're enlightened? Seriously, how do they know?
Did you guys see the YouTube on how you know you're enlightened or how to be enlightened? It's that guy
exactly
with the long red hair that
I'm telling you,
I couldn't get halfway through the video without peeing my pants.
It is so, and me and Bob were talking about it the other day. I was telling all our listeners on our show about how to be more spiritual, about how you have to talk always in a whisper, and you have to make unbearably long amounts of eye contact, and make a big stink about, what, you don't have gluten-free soy sauce? So, anyway, and we get that all the time. Oh, you must really watch your diet. You must be gluten-free. You must be a vegetarian. You must meditate 50 hours a day, you know? I mean, I've seen it on both sides, on the Reiki side, and it's not only Reiki. I've seen it in... It's all over
the place.
I've seen it in quantum healing. I've seen it in, what's
meditation,
that other one?
Yoga.
Yeah. Yoga. And, you know, you put the word spiritual into anything, and it either makes or breaks that practice.
That's
you get... and you get the wonky stereotypes. It's like, where the hell, pardon my French, is this coming from?
Exactly.
No, I'm not vegan. Oh, and it gets better. I'm a martial artist and a Reiki practitioner. Oh boy, it gets better because now I'm like vegan and a pacifist. Why are you practicing martial arts?
Yeah. Yeah, these people should eat with you once.
Yeah, you know, I mean.
Rusty and I share food things back and forth, and I told her once I can never meet you in person because we'll just sit there and eat like the entire day.
You know, one of these days, if I'm ever in New York, you have to take me to any place that has meat and grease, man.
Oh yeah, I know a lot of those places.
Oh my goodness. Well, you know, I have to close up the school here in a couple minutes.
I have to sign off. We've got 1 minute, so I want to thank you, Rusty, for being on the show. I'm sure we've cleared up some stereotypes and confusion for a lot of people.
I hope so.
On the
Reiki and
the martial arts.
Yeah, and I hope that, you know, there's a different outlook on the martial arts, that it's not a violent practice. It does not teach violence. In fact, you know, on the contrary, it teaches peace. Because you find out what you're capable of. And when you know what you're capable of and you know you can crack somebody's skull, you don't ever want to do it. So very spiritual in its own right.
And signing off, Bob feeds little puppies and kittens with little baby bottles in his spare time. So he's really a gentle person and a martial arts man. I'm not fair, people. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.